I will open the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for February 11th, 2015. There are two items on the agenda. The first is consideration of a grant. Ms. Naburka?
Good morning, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. I'm Julie Naburka from the Legislative Fiscal Office. The first item you have before you this morning is an application from the Oregon Department of Energy to apply to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for a $100,000 grant. In OLIS, you'll find the grant application request letter and the LFO analysis. And Mike Kaplan from the Department of Energy is here to talk to you about this request.
Good morning, Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. Thank you so much for sneaking me in this morning. I really appreciate it. The Oregon Department of Energy is requesting, for the record, Michael Kaplan, Director, Oregon Department of Energy. Oregon Department of Energy is requesting approval to apply for a competitive grant offered by the United States Department of Agriculture. The grant aligns with the department's mission and the priorities of the legislature. Additionally, the department was encouraged to apply for this opportunity directly by the USDA based on performance we've had in the past with a similar grant. USDA has made $2 million available nationwide for renewable energy development assistance and energy audit grants in 2015. ODA would like to apply for the maximum grant award of $100,000. The money will be spent over 2 years to provide technical support to rural small business who wish to evaluate on-site renewable energy opportunities and support existing work within the department that will satisfy the grant's required match. Funds will be made available statewide. However, the department will conduct targeted outreach to rural irrigators. In developing and implementing the grant, ODA will work with key strategic partners to provide outreach and technical support, including YEAST Resource Conservation and Development Council, Northwest Seed, Sustainable Northwest, and multiple irrigation districts. The application is due to USDA by close of business February 12th, tomorrow. The department anticipates a decision in September of 2015. If we're successful, the grant will not require any obligation for future expenditure of state funds. And finally, the department may need to return to you in the future to request federal fund limitation. Remains to be seen, depends on how much we receive and when. So thank you very much for your consideration of this request, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Kaplan? Okay.
I have one.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. These are not matching funds or anything, correct?
Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, Representative Hack, there is a match required, a 20% match, but we will be able to meet that with existing staff time. So there's no additional component of state funds that will be dedicated to receive this money.
So it's just staff time, but it's not actual dollars?
Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, Representative Hack, that's absolutely right.
Thank you for your clarification.
My pleasure.
Okay. Any additional comments? Seeing none. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the staff recommendation? Move into work session.
I'll go ahead and move to approve the submission of the federal grant application.
Okay. It's been moved to recommend approval of the federal grant application. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion carries. Representative Rayfield, will you carry to the full?
Yes, Chair Demo.
Okay.
Thank you.
With all grant applications, they're only carried to the full. So this will not go to the House or Senate floor. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Close that work session. Open a public hearing on SB 5522. Oh, last one. LFO will give their report.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, today we'll have a public hearing on the Oregon State Marine Board's budget. The Marine Board is responsible for registering and titling all recreational motorized and sailboats 12 feet and longer. They're comprised of four divisions, an administration and an education program, law enforcement program, facility grants program, and the aquatic invasive species program. And at this point, we'll call Scott Bruin up. And they can. We'll start their presentation.
Okay. Thank you. take whatever time you need.
And sure.
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Bruin, Director of the Oregon State Marine Board. It's a pleasure to be with you here this morning to go through our budget request for 15-17. I provided to the committee a lengthy written document that has all of the information that LFO had requested, so hopefully you all have a copy of that document. My purpose with the presentation today is to go over our goals, some of the high-level issues that we're dealing with, talk about our key performance measures, and our fee bill that we'll be moving forward. So happy to answer any questions along the way that you might have, or answer questions at the end. So we updated our mission statement this past year to reflect not only what we do, but why we do it. The agency's work in boater education, marine law enforcement, boating access grants and maintenance activities, and the work we do to keep the waterways clean all support the goal of our boaters having a safe and enjoyable experience on Oregon's waterways. As far as the overview, I wanted to kind of do the overview with some statistics to talk a little bit about what we do as an agency. We register about 167,000 boats. All motorized boats and sailboats 12 feet in length or over are required to be registered. All guides, whether fishing, hunting, sightseeing, bird watching, etc., must be registered with us. Charter boats are those that carry seven or more passengers for hire. What differentiates charter boats is that they're required to be inspected by the U.S. Coast Guard. In order to be certified as a clean marina, marinas must meet 85% of inspection standards, including all of the mandatory standards that apply to their marina. And that number up there for boater education cards, 319,823, that's the total number we've issued to date since the program came into being in 2003. This past year, we issued 12,556 new cards and 2,179 replacement cards. On the boating safety side, we contract with 32 counties and with the state police for boating safety enforcement and education. This past year, we did about 41,000 boating enforcement reports, or our partners did anyhow. They responded to 786 incidents, including 54 water-related suicide and body recoveries. Important to keep in mind, those aren't all boating-related. In fact, a very small portion are boating-related. They're out there on the water doing boating work, and they're able to do other work while they're out there as well. We had 26 vessel capsizing, 75 swamping, sinkings, collisions, or other water rescues. This current biennium, we spent about $69,000 on abandoned and derelict boat removal of those 23 boats. We have about 11 more that we're prepared to remove before the end of the biennium. We also run a boating facilities program. During the 11-13 biennium, we leveraged about $2.6 million of state funds for about $9 million worth of projects. That's 32 renovations and three new boating facilities. And over 12,000 hours supporting municipalities as they get ready for those facilities, such as permitting assistance, engineering assistance, that sort of thing. I wanted to touch on some of our goals for this biennium, keeping with our mission statement. I'll talk about them in terms of education, enforcement, access, and environmental stewardship, and then also talk about some of the goals we're still working on from our latest strategic plan. In the current biennium, we received $20,000 in order to rewrite our K-12 curriculum. That will be completed by the end of the biennium, and we hope to be able to move that out next biennium to have schools utilize that curriculum. The Marine Board curriculum was used quite a bit, or at least somewhat, in schools, but over the years it's being used less and less because there's more requirements being placed in the classroom. And so by attaching the curriculum or having specific references to Oregon science standards, Oregon health education benchmarks, and the Common Core state standards, We hope to be able to offer a curriculum that is more useful to them in meeting some of those standards that they have. On the enforcement side, the focus for this coming biennium is to continue to improve the effectiveness of the program by placing resources in the counties with the greatest need. Evidenced by boater use numbers, historic trends for boating fatalities and accidents, and triennial survey data for the boating activities of in-state motorized boaters, out-of-state motorized boaters, and non-motorized boaters. We'll also be looking at our boating under the influence of intoxicants program. That's something that in our KPMs we're in the red, so we're going to be doing a lengthy look at that program and make sure we're doing everything we can to ensure that the officers out there on the water have the tools they need for the work that they're doing. And a major goal of this program will continue to be looking at ways to reduce on-water conflict. On the boating access side, we're looking at more boater engagement on project priorities. As the amount of funds, as I'll talk about with costs, don't go as far, we're going to have to make more decisions about what types of facilities we fund and what types of facilities we can't afford to fund. So we need to get the boaters more involved in that decision-making process, and that's something we're looking at in the coming biennium. Along with that is building more partnerships to maximize the resources that are available. The state dollars that we bring, that we can bring more dollars, either federal or local, to help build these facilities. Quagga and zebra mussels continue to be a major concern, and the AIS program will work to increase the resources going to the inspection stations while also focusing on educating boaters of the risks and how to keep their boats clean. It's been 6 years since the program has been established, and the funding limits how early and how long those inspection stations can remain open. So in 2014, ODF&W on our behalf, with contract with the agency, conducted 11,490 watercraft inspections. 175 of those were contaminated with aquatic vegetation, 14 with marine organisms, and 4 other with freshwater mollusks. Additionally, there were 17 watercraft that were contaminated with either quagga or zebra mussels that were found. They came from Arizona, Illinois, Michigan, Nevada, Ohio, Texas, Utah, and Wisconsin. So this coming biennium, identifying efficiencies within the program so we can get more money towards those inspections and do more to educate the public is a huge priority for us. And then looking again at abandoned vessels, we are not lacking in the number of abandoned vessels that are out there that need to be removed from our waters. We've been spending time educating municipalities this biennium on House Bill 2233, which gave us more ability to remove these boats from the water, reduce the match requirement for former recreational vessels, and now we're getting a lot of calls from folks that are ready to remove these vessels from our waters. So in the coming biennium, what I listed is the priorities to expend that sub-account that we have, $150,000 each biennium, that we put into that account for that purpose. We've never expended that account before in a biennium because of the difficulties for property owners to remove these boats, but we believe in this coming biennium we'll get a lot closer. We spent more this biennium than we have in any previous biennium, and we think we'll be able to do that and get some control over these abandoned boats that are out on our waterways. We also have some goals we're working on the strategic plan perspective. By July, our board will give us guidance on whether to move forward with draft legislation for a non-motorized program, including financial participation by non-motorized boaters. I'm going to talk a lot about non-motorized boaters as I go through this presentation. This is something we've been working on for 2 years now. We put together some recommendations. We'll take them through our external advisory committee this spring and make a determination whether we move forward with legislation for the following biennium. This past summer, we brought a new titling and registration program online and retired our 25-year-old legacy system. As a result of the downtime of transitioning the systems, the learning curve for staff to learn the new system, the learning curve for boaters to learn the online system, and some of the initial issues with the program, along with some staff changes in a very busy summer because of the great fishing that was out there this summer. We fell behind, and we're continuing to work through that backlog of title transfers that we're working on. We're caught up in our registrations. We're caught up in new boat title transfers, but we're working on getting caught up in the other title transfers. Once we do so, we'll be able to look at how we can better optimize this system to be to better serve our customers into the future, and that's what we'll be working on this coming biennium. The last goal I wanted to mention, which is an important one from us, is we've established boat organ advisory teams, and these are groups of boaters. We've brought in just regular boaters to talk with them about the priorities that they have. They requested to be on a team based on certain interests, water sports, outdoor sportsmen, cruising or paddling, and we bring these groups in two times a year to have discussions with them about statewide issues and to get their advice. A lot of the goals that I talked about dealing with both boating facilities, with user conflict on the waterways, these are things that we want to engage that group with. Additionally, we want to engage them on the update to our strategic plan. That's coming up this coming biennium, so we'll work with them in that discussion. I wanted to go through some of the drivers that are impacting us as an agency as we move forward. The cost drivers you can see up here, likely I don't think any of these will surprise you that these are the things that drive costs for us. About 70% of the money that comes into the Marine Board is turned back around and sent out for boating facility grants and to our law enforcement partners. So the costs that drive their work are a huge portion of the costs that drive the work that we do. Materials for construction costs, not only are materials in general going up, but we are starting to use aluminum for our boarding floats and high-density polyethylene for the flotation. These are much more expensive to build. However, they last about 2 to 3 times longer than the wood floats that we've built in the past. And not being able to use pressure-treated wood anymore because it's not good for the environment, the wood that we've been using lately won't even get us that 10 years. So aluminum costs a lot more, but we'll get a lot more time from it, and it's more environmentally friendly to use that material. Labor, of course, has gone up. We had a number of years of very cheap projects during the downturn in the economy and a lot of hungry contractors, but that's changed, and so these projects are costing us more than they've been costing us the past few biennium. And then permitting compliance, it continues to be costly to deal with some of the permitting requirements, so we continue to deal with the costs of those. On the enforcement side, personnel costs, we're enjoying the fact that fuel prices are down right now, but that may only be a short time before they go back up, but equipment and supplies continue to go up as well. On the revenue side, and we'll be talking about our fee bill coming up, but our last fee increase was 2003, so it's been 12 years since we've had a fee increase. Over the last 5 years, we've had a 7% loss in the number of registered boats, and average fuel use by boaters has dropped 17%. Another piece that plays into that is non-motorized boaters do not pay for any of OSMB services, yet they're a huge growth group, which I'll show in a slide coming up. As I've talked to some of you about previously, our fuel use is determined by a quadrennial fuel use survey. And just to give you an idea, in 2006, the average fuel use for recreational boats was 126 gallons per year. That went down to 100 gallons per year in 2010. And in our latest survey in 2014, it's down to 83 gallons per year. So you can see the drop off in that graph in 2015 as a result of that change in our formula, going from 5 million a year to 4.1 million, a slight bump, and then we see another downward trend as if we anticipate that our fee bill goes in and losing some of our boaters. But that gives you an idea of where our fuel tax is going. On the service side, we have good news. There's increased participation by boaters on Oregon's waterways. That's great news because we want people to be on the waterways, but it is a service driver for us, and it means that we need to keep doing the work that we're doing out on the waters. Along with that is is the significant growth of non-motorized boating and additional stress on facilities and boating safety enforcement. So let me give you an example. Of the 41,000 boater contacts that I talked about earlier in the presentation, 23,000 were non-motorized boaters. That's 56%. Of those 41,000 contacts, we had 4,930 warnings, of which 1,088 were non-motorized, and 1,945 citations, of which 713 of those were non-motorized. Non-motorized boaters continue to play a part in the work that we do on the search and rescue and body recovery side. 3 of 7 deaths in 2014 were non-motorized, 7 of 10 in 2013, and 10 of 19 in 2012. So non-motorized boaters have always been on our waterways. They've always been a part of the work that we do as an agency. But the tremendous growth of that group is something that we can't ignore in the work that we do as an organization. And here's the graph that I talked about. The graph on the left is the statewide comprehensive outdoor recreational plan that State Parks does, and this is their 2011 survey. And what it really shows you, that top graph is power boats. The graph below that, the line below that, is non-motorized boating. And you can see in both of those areas, they actually look at it in people use days, so the number of people per day out on the water. So one person in a kayak is one person day. 5 people in a motorized boat is 5 people days. So while our number of motorized boats has gone down, our people days on the water is actually increasing. And in fact, in 2011, non-motorized boating exceeded motorized boating for the first time in this state for the person days out on the water. So it is certainly a growth area. That compares to the graph on the right, which shows our registrations over that same time period. So some of the environmental factors that are impacting us. Boat registration growth, at least in Oregon, has lagged behind economic recovery. Looking over about the last 4 years, only about 1.1% of our boats were new boats in that year. On the registered side, which is a small amount, we're not replacing, if you will, new boats with the older boats that are falling off. As of this point, it's about steady. We're hoping to see some improvement, but we're seeing slight improvement year on year for new boats that are coming out, but it still represents a small percentage of the boats that are out there. Compare that to non-motorized boats. 11% of drift boats are new boats. 10% of whitewater kayaks are new. 16% of other kayaks are new. And here's one, 54% of stand-up paddle boards are new. So that is a huge growth area in boating, and looks like it will continue to be into the future. Some cost reductions and program efficiencies that we put into this budget. We have eliminated 1.0 FTE for mandatory education, a half an FTE for registration, reduced postage by $20,000, and IT expenditures by $20,000. All of those reductions are based on our new titling and registration system. We believe we're going to see efficiencies with that system, which will allow us to do things with less people and less cost for some of those areas. So we've built that into the budget based on efficiencies we're anticipating with that system. So House Bill 2459, this bill proposes increasing certain fees set in statute to fund agency operations for a projected 6 years. The average registration and title transaction cost will increase 66%. Failure to increase revenue would lead to budget reductions, mainly in law enforcement contracts and boating access maintenance and improvement projects. In the 2011 legislative session, the agency took substantial cuts and limitation in administration and for special payments for law enforcement contracts and boating access improvements as a result of lower revenue from declining boat registrations. At a subsequent e-board, the agency was authorized to spend down ending balance to reduce the impact of those cuts as a one-time expense for law enforcement contracts and boating access grants. The agency was similarly provided one-time limitation in the 2013 session to fund those programs. So the agency has spent most of the ending balance above the three-month operating holdback. House Bill 2459 would provide the necessary funding to continue to fund those programs through the next biennium. So the proposed fee increase is necessary to cover inflationary increases over the last 12 years, but additionally it replaces the lost revenue from the fuel tax as a result of 17% less fuel usage by boaters. As already discussed, the 7% loss in registered boats in Oregon has not decreased service needs by boaters on Oregon's waterways. The significant increase in non-motorized boating has put a measurable strain on both the boating facilities and law enforcement assets. So just to give you a comparison, with the legislation and the requested policy option packages, the 15-17 governor's recommended budget is 9% below the 11-13 governor's recommended budget for administration. It's only 0.4% above the governor's recommended budget in 11-13 for law enforcement and 0.6% above the GRB for facilities. So by no means is this fee increase a growth increase. This is allowing us to maintain the funding levels that we've had in the past as we move forward. I won't go through all of the key performance measures, although I'm happy to answer questions if you do on specific measures, but I did want to touch on the measures that are either red or yellow. Key performance measure number two is the number of boat operators arrested for boating under the influence of intoxicants. So over the past 4 years, this average has dropped significantly. So the target is 100 to about 49 arrests per year. The 2014 total of 36 arrests is the second lowest since this KPM has been tracked. So is it truly a reduction of drinking while boating, or is there an enforcement issue that we need to address? And that really is the question that we're looking at. If we compare ourselves to the other 56 states and territories, Oregon ranked 26th in the number of registered boats in 2013. But we were 21st in the number of boat operators arrested for BUIIs. So put another way, Oregon has 1.45% of registered boaters, and we did 2% of the boating under the influence of intoxicants arrests. So what that tells us, at least comparatively, is that we're about where we would expect to be in the number of arrests, and that perhaps nationally we're seeing boating under the influence going down. However, this coming year, as I talked about, we are looking at our Boating Under the Influence program. We have some training coming to the state this spring for our officers, and we're looking to make sure that we're doing what we can to make sure that officers are out there looking for intoxicated boaters and that they have the tools that they need in order to determine that they are intoxicated and remove them from the waterways. Key performance measure number five is the number of gallons of boater-generated sewage not deposited in Oregon waters as a result of Marine Board floating restrooms and pump-out and dump station facilities. So these are facilities built with Clean Vessel Act funds. We do have monitors on these facilities, so they tell us how much sewage goes in there. In 2013, we had 754,848 gallons that we measured, which was slightly above that target of 750,000 gallons. In 2014, we had a number of the monitoring systems that were broken. In fact, the board just approved 7 grants to repair some of these facilities. So we believe the major reason for this was because we weren't capturing those numbers because the monitoring systems had broken down, and we're anticipating in the future years that those numbers will go back up. Key performance measure number eight is the average number of days it takes to process requests for grant reimbursements. We have a goal of 2.4 days. Our actual this past year was 7 days. Part of this relies on the accuracy and eligibility of supporting documentation supplied by the grant recipient. Sometimes we have to send those back to them requesting additional information, which delays the time period. You're never going to get it in 2.4 days when you have to go back to get that information. The second piece, which is important for us, is we've added another layer of review. It now goes through one of our engineering staff who is affiliated with that project to make sure not only have they met the paper requirements, but the actual work has been done to the satisfaction that we anticipate for that project. So there's an additional sign-off that I think is important to make sure. It's important, I think, to be efficient, but it's also to make sure that the work that's being done and the work that's being billed is appropriate for the amount of work that's been completed. I'm not sure if we're going to see that number approach that 2.4 days again, but we'll see how that goes in the coming bylaw. A key performance number 10 is the percent of best practices met by the board. This has a target of 100% compliance, and we have an assessment we send out to board members, and the prior assessment said yes or no on the assessment, and we had 100% need for yes, and we had 100% going back as far as we could track. I had concerns about that and how accurate that was, and whether we were getting truly a good look at how well we are meeting those best practices. Very rarely does anybody achieve something at 100%. I would rather have a lower number that we have something to work on. So what we did is we established a 1 through 10 scaled approach where each board member individually fills out their assessment on a 1 to 10 approach, and we take that, we do a cumulative average, and then we look at that number, which is the 92%. Likely we won't see 100%. There's always room for improvement, but we feel it's a better way for us to engage with the board and make sure that we're doing the work that the board expects us to do. So with that is the completion of my testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Walker? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. We had this discussion in my office, but I want to get the concerns on the record. You know, you mentioned the law enforcement piece and that you contract out with the Oregon State Patrol, and, you know, your budget request looks at increasing user fees. And when we get user fee requests, I know that I get emails from constituents who have a boat or a fishing license or anything where, you know, DMV, anything that we are raising a user fee. And, you know, in this state, we tend to seem to use user fees in lieu of raising taxes. So when those fees go up and the perceived value to the customer doesn't match the increase in the fees and the cost seems to be a labor cost, the question I asked you and I'd like you to discuss maybe with here is you contract out with OSP, but do you have any say over the cost of OSP in terms of when the bargaining piece happens with them, or you're just sort of forced to accept whatever you get?
Chair Devlin, Representative Parrish, we don't get to determine how much it costs for any of the agencies we work with for their personnel costs. So they bargain that independently if it's with a union or through whatever process they go through, and then that is what it's cost us for an officer or a trooper in this case. With state police, we have a certain percentage of that that those available funds that we dedicate to the state police, and that buys less and less each year of essentially trooper time for them to do the work that we do. Our special payments follows general inflation when it's inflated up in our current service level budget versus our personnel costs for the agency are inflated based on the personnel costs for the state. So we don't ever keep up with the personnel costs of the officers that are doing the work for us on the water. So in a lot of cases, we have to look at other ways of doing business. Reserve officers a lot of times will be a second person on the boat and they'll help out. Retired officers sometimes work for some of these counties and do the work. Clatsop County, they have a great thing going now where they have Coast Guard members ride the sheriff's boat. So they have one sheriff deputy with one Coast Guard person on board, which means we don't have to fund two sheriff's deputies to be on the boat at one time. So the answer to your question is, yes, we don't control those costs, so we have to look at other ways in order to continue to do the same work that we're doing.
Follow-up?
Yeah.
Is there anything that precludes you in state law from finding other sources to do more contracting, whether it's with reserve officers or ways to bring those costs down? Because one of the things, and we certainly see it with OSP on the road, is that as costs go up, and I appreciate, you know, we want to pair law enforcement officers the right way, but as those costs go up and the budgets don't match, we see the service level go down. So in the last decade or so, we've seen a significant reduction of force on our roads. I'm assuming we've seen some of that reduction in force on the waterways as well, as you're not able to, you know, grow and expand your budget, or you're not getting a lot of general funds or any general funds. to speak of to grow that budget so that you actually have an effective force on the waterways. Am I reading this correctly?
Chair Devlin, Representative Parrish, yeah, I think you're reading it correctly. We have the ability to contract with whoever we desire to contract with for boating safety enforcement. We're not limited in who that is. We choose to contract with who we choose to contract for a couple of different reasons. We need to use certified law enforcement officers for that work, so they have to be currently certified in order to do that work. We love working with the sheriffs because they already have a law enforcement presence in the area. They already have dispatching operations there. They know the people. They know the waterways they're dealing with. State police gives us a wonderful resource both out on ocean waters or nearshore waters. They also cover a lot of areas that may not be covered as well by the county sheriffs. And when you look at how those funds work, we fund how many state police troopers right now?
Five.
We fund five troopers of the entire Fish and Wildlife Division. But every trooper on the Fish and Wildlife Division does some work to support the Marine Board, so that the bang for the buck, if you will, goes out to multiple. So 126 of them are out there doing work, which could benefit the agency. So it's a good program for us and a good relationship for us to have, but we purchase less of it each year because of those costs.
Okay. Can I just make a comment? I think as we continue to kind of struggle with, you know, increased roll-up costs and agencies that have, you know, are really primarily generated by other funds, i.e. fees the taxpayers are paying, I think it's very problematic that nobody from this agency gets to have a seat at that table to discuss how the labor contracts actually are influencing their budget and driving the cost to taxpayers. And I really think that we need to look at that as potentially being an option in the future, because I have a really hard time. I know you guys do great work, and I know our sheriffs, you know, Clackamas County Sheriff, they do a wonderful job in being out there with you guys on waterways and responding to emergencies. And I've got a boat, you know, boat ramps in my district, and they're there, and they're super helpful in the boat safety. I mean, just all of it. You guys do a great job. But when taxpayers aren't seeing that they are getting value, and we're just saying, hey, we're going to raise your boat fees again this year, and I know you haven't raised them in a while, but the perception is they're getting the hunting license raised last year, the boat fees raised this year, some other fee, you know, on their trailer raised the subsequent year. Like, all they see is that they're being nickeled and dimed for less service, less patrols on the water. And I think it's a mistake to not have these agencies at the table having that conversation that, hey, we're contracting out with you folks, but you are driving up our costs and we don't have a say in the system. And so, I mean, I think we should think about that as a legislature, because it's going to be hard for me to vote yes on, you know, on increasing user fees when I can't go back to my district and say this is the value you're going to get for it, this new net new value for the increase in cost.
Additional questions? Yes, Senator Hansel.
Forgive me if I missed it. In your revenue, do you receive any fuel taxes back towards the Marine Board?
Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel, yes, we do. We, based on our quadrennial fuel use survey and that number that I spoke of for the average gallons of usage per year, we look at the number of boats that we have, and we actually categorize them. So law enforcement boats are different, and liveries are different because they tend to use more fuel than the average boat. But then we essentially send a letter to the Oregon Department of Transportation and request a certain amount of fuel tax come back to the Marine Board.
Yes.
The fuel that's used in the majority, particularly inboard motors, are you able to burn percentage of ethanol in that, or are those machines such that you need to have a higher grade of petroleum products?
Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel, one of the big issues with ethanol and marine engines is that ethanol absorbs water. And so water, of course, is never good for a marine engine. We believe that, and most of the studies and most of that marine agencies around the country believe more than 10% could start to be a problem for marine engines because of that fact. They sit out on water, it's humid, and they can absorb that into the fuel, and then it becomes a problem for those small motors. We encourage, and in fact, on our website, we have all of the locations of non-ethanol fuel for boaters, so if they choose to use a non-ethanol option for their boat for that purpose, that they know where those locations are.
Well, continuing to increase the non-carbon fuels really is, I mean, it creates additional problems for the boating community than it sounds like to me.
Chair Devlin, Senator Hansel, I'm not a good person to ask about how much more would impact to what degree. I don't really know that information, but I do know that that ethanol in fuel has that potential, especially when it sits for any length of time. So the faster you're burning through it, on my sailboat, I would have 2.5 gallons. It would last me the entire season. So I didn't burn through fuel quickly, so it was an issue for a 9.9 outboard that was burning through it very slowly. But if you burn through it faster, I don't know the specifics about ethanol, but as far as potential for fuel to get in there, there's less of that potential.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a few questions. Mr. Bruin, we normally like to keep about 4 months of reserves in agencies like yours in terms of operating revenue, and 3 months is about the minimum. How much reserves do you have now as you go into 15-17? How many months of operating reserves do you have?
Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield. For the record, I'm Christian Grower, the Business Services Manager for the Oregon State Marine Board. Our projection for the end of the biennium is that we would have approximately 4 to 6 months of reserve.
Okay. And you may be the best person to answer this next question, too. In this fiscal year that's ending June 30th, how much of your operating budget was covered actually by reserves versus incoming revenue? You don't have to have it off the top of your head. You can just get it to me.
Yeah, okay. I'll get. So the question is, how much is this ending period is covered by fumes or cash versus new revenue?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Chair Devlin, we can get you that number, but we had put into our budget about $2.5 million that we would spend down of that ending balance during this budget. But he can get you the specifics of how much we spent down this biennium.
Okay. And Mr. Walker, if you could, because some of the people on the committee are new, can you explain, although we do not use current service level normally in budgeting anymore, we still make the calculation. But as a contracted service, what kind of percentage increase they're allowed in terms of current service level? And this would relate to the issue of contracted law enforcement.
Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I believe the percentage put on the inflation on personal services and professional services is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2-3%. And that is a number that DAS provides us, and so that is automatically worked into their budget, and that's irrespective. I believe that DAS tries to do their best to figure out what that number is, but generally it runs 2-3%, and so that's not really reflective of what the labor cost may be for professional services.
Okay. Just to point out that we always experience this issue, actually. Any additional questions? This is actually the quietest subcommittee I have ever had. Representative Rayfield.
I just want to follow up. You had said at the end of the biennium there you would have 4 to 6 months of reserves. I think, Chair Devlin, you were asking, are you talking about the end of the 2015-17 biennium, or are you talking about the current biennium?
Current. I was talking current.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just better hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a statement on law enforcement. It's not the state police, the sole contractor. Counties do that as well. Local sheriff's department, including my home county of Umatilla County. It was an integral part of our law enforcement activity. So it's not just state police, but there are contracts with local sheriff's departments as well.
Yes.
Yeah, Chair Devlin and committee, state police is approximately 14% of our law enforcement budget, and then 86% would be for the county sheriff's departments.
Yes, Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Going back to the problem of the increase, the growing increase in the number of non-motorized, what do we call them? They're not vehicles exactly, but
boats.
Boats. Yeah. Even when you stand up and pull with them. Yeah. Are you thinking about, you know, how to increase the revenue stream from those users? Are there, you know, registration fees that could be contemplated? Are there, you know, how are other states handling this?
Chair Devlin, Senator Denbrough, that has been the work that we've been doing over the past 2 years with an external advisory committee made up of non-motorized boaters from a variety of areas and others to try to look at what are the needs of that user group and is there an appropriate funding source to or an appropriate way of funding the work that we need to do for that user group and the needs that that user group has, particularly with boating access. There's a lot of boating access needs that we've seen with non-motorized boaters. We spent quite a bit of time last year. We had 17 public meetings around the state inviting non-motorized boaters in to get their thoughts on what a program might look like and to find out how much support is out there to move forward with the program, because the Marine Board has attempted to register non-motorized boats in the past and has been unable to do so. So we're really trying to work with that user group to find out what might that look like and what would you be interested in doing. While that program hasn't been put together and we need the board to give us approval to move forward, part of the discussion has been not going the route of a title like we do for a motorized boat where you have to put stickers on the bow. And that is an administratively heavy process. You have to have registration personnel and process all of that information. So it ends up costing quite a bit in administration to run a program like that. Versus what we've talked about is we already have an aquatic invasive species program. You already have a permit. Simply adding a fee in addition to it on that permit, your $5 moves into aquatic invasive species. The remainder moves into an account to fund enforcement and facilities that support that user group. So that's been the discussion so far. But we're kind of taking the information we received from those user groups back to the external advisory committee and then back to the board to have them decide on what direction to move forward.
Thank you.
Mr. Bruin, one final question. Having had a little bit of experience with this, in terms of your new facilities and facilities improvement, would it be fair to say that you are getting more requests from non-motorized groups for improvements or for new facilities?
Chair Devlin, that's absolutely correct. And in fact, it's been interesting because last year in these meetings, we said we're simply just asking for your input. We're not moving anything forward. There's no legislation. And we've had a number of calls from people saying, well, now that you have a program, can you fund this thing or that thing? And we said there's still no program. We haven't moved forward. Yeah. We just got a request yesterday for a facility, somebody looking for a put-in and take-out specifically for non-motorized boaters. So we are seeing more of those. And in fact, the Oregon Parks County Parks facilities are wanting to do a lot more for non-motorized boating, so we get a lot of requests from them as well.
Any additional questions from the committee? Thank you very much, and I'll go to Mr. Miller from the Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you.
Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Travis Miller with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here to present the Governor's 2015-17 budget for the Oregon State Marine Board. In terms of the policy and funding issues, I think those have been covered fairly adequately, but I'll just go ahead and reiterate them. Decreased voter registrations. They are hopefully going to recover soon, but have essentially kind of bottomed out in the last couple of years, and they're projected to go up. But that does present an issue, given the reliance on registration revenue. Marine law enforcement, as discussed, this is a significant cost driver. And I could also add facilities investments, and the fee increase. To maintain the current operations, the current level of on-water patrol hours for marine law enforcement, to maintain those facility investments is necessary to raise fees, just to sustain what we have, as opposed to reinvest or add additional service. Tying this budget to the 10-year plan, it ties both to public safety, keeping boaters safe, as well as the healthy environment, and really trying to prevent the introduction of aquatic invasive species. The economic impact of zebra mussels is in the multiple millions of dollars. The Great Lakes area is struggling with this. There are multiple states surrounding us who've already been infested. So whatever we can do to avoid that is important. Looking at the total funds budget, we're looking at $33.7 million, predominantly other funds, and also some cost reductions. Looking at the reduction of two positions with 1.5 FTE, and really it's almost indistinguishable from the 2013-15 budget. It's less than a percentage point change. I put up the expenditures by category just to emphasize the fact that special payments and transfers to local law enforcement, as well as facility investments, constitutes a significant majority of this budget, 70% essentially. And also, given the increasing cost of marine law enforcement over time, the administration has actually shrunk over time. So it's essentially displacing those administrative functions to maintain the same level of service. Also, just in terms of historical trends, on-water patrol hours have basically been between 66 and 72,000 per year, averaging 68,661, and those have pretty much remained constant. So we're maintaining a consistent level of marine law enforcement. It just costs more to maintain. Looking at the revenue picture, a more detailed and longer-term historic look, you can clearly see the reduction in the fuels tax in the neighborhood of $2 million between 13-15 and the current biennium. That has to be replaced somehow. Federal funds are anticipated to remain stable, but really in the absence of this fee increase, there will be substantial service reductions, both in facilities and marine law enforcement. That essentially ends my presentation. I'm available for questions.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Miller?
Yes, Representative Rayfield, Chair.
I was just actually curious about the boating under the influence fees, and one of the three you might be able to answer that. Does any of those fees come back to the Oregon State Marine Board?
Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, no, those go into the unitary assessment account if somebody is cited and has to pay pay as a result of that. Those don't come back to the agency.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you all very much. We will go on to the public hearing portion. We have six people that have signed up. I will be calling up, just momentarily, but I'll call them up three at a time, actually. So if Mr. Robeson would come forward, Mr. Tom Wolf, and Mr. Gates. And start in any order in which you think it's best, and please identify yourself for the record, and if you're here to represent anyone or any organization, please identify that organization.
I I guess it's at its end. I'll start at this end. Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Larry Robison, and I am the Parks Director for Coos County. And I'm here wearing a couple of hats, I guess. I'm representing today the Oregon Parks Association, which is a vital partner with the Oregon State Marine Board in providing facilities across the state. I'm also here as the Director and Facility Manager for Coos County, which manages these facilities, and I'd like to speak a little bit on a couple of questions that the committee ask about boaters, because I am one. I have two boats that I register and I use. So first of all, for the Oregon Parks Association, we have partnered with the Oregon State Marine Board for, let's see, I've been at this 40 years, so it's been somewhere in that 40 years. I have been we have been partnering with them. I think the Oregon Park Association has been in existence since about 1966. So, and I've been a member of that since 1974. So, anyway, so from the Oregon Parks Association's perspective, this agency is, of all the agencies that we work with, would be the federal, state, local. This is the one that we have found that is one of the easiest to work with. They're a phone call or an email away. If we have a question, if we have an idea, whatever, they are more than receptive to those. They'll come down. For instance, if we say, hey, we'd like to do something here, normally I send them a picture and it's not very long, I get a response back where they're going to send somebody down to take a look at it. If I have a problem, if I need a design, if I need some questions on a permit application, that is provided in a speedy and effective way that allows us to put stuff together for our ongoing budgets, which is amazing. So, of all the departments that I get to work with on a fairly regular basis, this is the one that I really like to work with. They come up with some new ideas. If I have a dumb idea, it's told back to me. It's a dumb idea. Which is a good thing, because sometimes we go about, we get this in our head, and it's just not going to work. And so the quicker we're told it's not going to work, the better off it is. So as a facilitator, as someone who maintains the facilities and receives funding from the through the facilities program, through the maintenance assistance program, it is invaluable for Coos County. We have 10 facilities that are on the water, either rivers or lakes, and in order to help maintain those, It's vital for us to receive that funding to help us to offset some of the costs that it takes to manage those. A number of those facilities are older, so the older they get, the more it takes to keep them up and manageable and open to the public. So that money is very much needed by most all Oregon counties, I would say all of them, to help us keep those access points available to the boaters and our constituents. One of the questions that was asked earlier was, how does the Marine Board find out about how the people feel, especially the question from Representative Parrish about how do we explain to people if we're going to do a fee increase or if I've got a problem at a boat ramp, and they say, how do we get a hold of the Marine Board? I said, well, I'm your first contact. What questions do you have for me that I can represent back to the Marine Board? And a lot of that is, I pay an increase, and I haven't seen this. Well, if I'm at the facility, for instance, I'll take them down and say, this is what your dollars paid for. And once they see that, they're understandable what they're getting for their product. A lot of people, they just pay their fee. They really don't see what they're getting from their buck. And at least I get the opportunity to show them this is what they're getting for their buck. And it does. It does benefit. And then if they have a question, for instance, that I can't answer, I get on the phone or I get an email and I send it to staff at the Marine Board, and they can say, this is what we're doing, Larry. We've got some projects in line. Pass this along to your constituent or your boaters. And once you do that, you get a pretty good rapport with those folks, and then they understand what takes place. To highlight a couple of things that Director Bowen put across, I'm a fisherman as well, so I happen to read magazines that concern fishing, and one of my magazines yesterday, I was reading it before I got up here, they had 5 concerns nationwide about boating, that kind of things across the country. Of the of the five, two that the Marine Board has already addressed in the state of Oregon, access and invasive species, we're already working towards those. They're losing a lot of access points across the nation, whereas here in Oregon, it looks like we're looking to add those access points, which is a positive for the state of Oregon. Also, Coos County happens to be the first of the boat wash stations constructed through the invasive species program with the Marine Board. We were funded by partial Marine Board funds and U.S. Forest Service funds. So at 10 Mile Lakes, we have the first boat wash station constructed in the state of Oregon. And why did we put it there? Well, we had funding to do it there. The Forest Service came up and said, hey, Larry, would you like to put, they were concerned about the invasive species coming from both directions. And they said, would you like to do something? Well, this is a good point. And they don't want it impacting their coastal bodies of water as well. So we funded it through the invasive species program from the Marine Board and through Forest Service. And the people who use it now, it takes a, you know, a little bit of a learning curve for people to understand why it's there, what they use it for. And it's now received. People will come in and actually, when they...
Can you back up a little bit from the mic?
Getting too much feedback. I apologize. Anyway, what they do is they now realize that that boat wash station was put there for a reason. It was funded by the $5 fee that you pay when you register and license your boat, and they see a benefit from that. And now it took about a month or a month and a half for education for my staff to be there on site when people pull their boats in and out. And they actually, now we have people, and it's set up so you can wash your boat when you come in prior to the lake, and it's set to come out when you pull your boat out. And so they use it. So it's something that's been done positively that they use. The last thing, as a user, and speaking to Senator Hansel's question on fuel, and the when they first put the ethanol fuel in, I lost a 150 horse Mercury motor to the ethanol fuel. Had it rebuilt once, lost it again. So a new motor cost me $12,000. So the ethanol does affect marine motors. And so now I look, and I have two places in the county that I can buy non-ethanol fuel, and that's what I run in it. But a lot of people, that first session when the state institute that ethanol fuel policy, it wiped out a number of marine motors. So questions?
Okay, well, go to the next person first, and if you could limit yourself to about 3 to 4 minutes.
Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Rayfield, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, here representing the 3,000 members of Trout Unlimited here in the state. We are here to support the Marine Board's budget of SB 5522, and I'll keep my comments brief. Remembering that the Gettysburg Address only took 2 minutes. So here they are. They're concerning the invasive species part of the program, the Marine Board. We, in 2009, the Trout Unlimited helped pass bills that created the invasive species program. It's something we're very proud of. It might be the best thing I've ever done in this building. And we think that what they're doing is great, because the only way to really prevent the spread of quagga mussels, zebra mussels, New England mud snails is to prevent them from entering the state. And as outlined by Director Bruin, the program has been doing a great job. It's stopped way more boats than we originally thought. So it's doing a tremendous job. We encourage that their budget be passed so they continue to do the great work in partnership with ODFW they're doing on this. And because the only way we're ever going to prevent the explosion of invasive snails and that come into this, that have entered other states, is to prevent them from coming to this state. Thank you.
Mr. Gates.
Sorry, too much stuff. Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is Jason Gates, and I am the Multnomah County Sheriff Staten's Law Enforcement Division Chief Deputy. I'm also a co-chair with Sheriff Staten on the Oregon State Sheriff's Office, or State Sheriff's Association subcommittee to the Oregon State Marine Board, our advisory. I'm here to testify in support of this budget. I would tell you that in many, many years in dealing with the Marine Board and working with them, that it always appears to me to be a very good example of fiscal responsibility, transparency, and willingness to work with their partners. They have a monumental task in being able to provide quality. They worked very hard in the last couple years to produce a fair model in reference to a formula to make the distribution of these funds to the different sheriff's programs equitable and efficient. And so we're definitely in support. I would also say that we have been provided with the research and documentation in reference to HB 2459, and that two things that struck me about the research that was done, the information that provided, was there hasn't been a fee increase in 12 years, while costs have gone up for us with regard to materials, boats, personnel, as our budgets have also declined. And that other part of it is that even if this fee was passed, that Oregon still remains one of the most cost-effective states to own a boat compared to our neighboring states. And so, you know, nobody wants fee increases. As a committee, subcommittee, we are also still considering all of those issues with that. But, we've been doing more with less for a long time, keeping up our services. The number of patrol hours have maintained, although our programs have declined. So the sheriffs are trying very hard to maintain that public safety service with less money. So I think that, we're managing our money the best we can. State Marine Board's managing theirs the best they can. And we are in support of that.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Robeson, Mr. Wolf, or Mr. Gates? Seeing none, thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Robeson, for coming from such a long distance. We'll go to the next three people to testify, Peggy Lynch, Andrew Meyer, and Brian Carroll. And committee, we do actually have a seventh person that has now signed up. So,
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon, co-chairs and members of the committee. The League has very strong positions on water quality and quantity, and therefore the invasive species program, which is the permit that the non-motorized vessels now pay for, although not run through the Marine Board, actually pays for that program. And we're supportive of it when it began. We are continue to be supportive of it. We are supportive of the concept of local partnerships with counties related to the law enforcement with the Marine Boards. And we would like to again mention that the last fee increase was 2003. So although we're not, like anybody else, not really excited about fee increases, and Oregon is a state that uses fees probably more than we would like, because we believe there is a public, if we have a public program, there's a public responsibility. But in this case, since 2003, it seems like a reasonable thing to do to have a fee increase. So with those comments, the only thing I would like to say is 10 Mile Lakes, it's really nice to have a washing station, if you've ever been there, between the algae and the failing septics. It's really important to have that program. I just needed to add that little. Thank you very much.
Please proceed.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Andy Meyer. I am Executive Vice President of the Columbia River Yachting Association. We represent 19 yacht clubs on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers, and we are here to support the Marine Board in any way we can. We work closely with the Marine Board, giving them information about boating on the rivers, and we would be very disappointed if we lost any of the valued resources that they have. We also, believe it or not, are in favor of the fee increase. We have talked about it throughout our clubs, and we understand you've got to pay for the things you get, and we get a lot from the Marine Board. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Devlin, Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is Brian Carroll. I am a member of the Oregon State Marine Board currently and a former chair of the Marine Board. And I just want to start out my comments by talking about how over the past, I've been on the board about 6 years, and over that time period, the board has changed quite a bit. It is certainly diversified. We have quite a few more members that from different areas of the state and representing different boating interests as they've grown and diversified across the state. And what I have seen from the Marine Board in the last 4 years, the changes have been very dramatic. And the board has a varying group of opinions on issues. But one of the things they were unanimous in was support of this budget, and also support of the fee increase, because it has been 12 years and because we have struggled with going through the budgets and trying to figure out where we're going to cut in order to continue to provide the service level that we would really like to provide. And in particular, Representative Parrish's comments regarding personnel costs have been something that we've really struggled with as a board, and something that I in particular have really struggled with as well, trying to wrap our arms around how we're going to continue to operate with the personnel costs. And it is something that I don't have the answer for currently. And some of the other costs that have gone up, permitting in particular is something that is certainly a great impact. When you have 18 to 20 agencies weighing in on projects, facility projects, and having them each, almost all of them, requiring some kind of fee to help cover their cost of time, it's a struggle. So, but one of the things I would say as somebody that has been involved with the Marine Board for about 18 years is that the staff here at the Marine Board and what Director Bruin has put together is very, very good. I've worked with state agencies across Oregon for the past 18 years, and they provide a great service. They really reach out to their constituents, including the providers, the law enforcement agencies. And a couple of things that I have seen in the last 4 years since Director Bruin has come on is a complete overhaul of the law enforcement program, a complete revamping of the facilities program as well, in terms of looking at the designs and going out and trying to find more effective and efficient ways of doing business. I have also seen them combine a couple of the programs in the Marine Board in order to create more efficiencies. So they are certainly trying to take advantage of situations when they are opportunities when they occur. So, and then the last thing that I would say is the agency is very proactive when it comes to the non-motorized part of the program. They have really reached out to that community. It is something that has been a priority for the board, and the staff has responded in a great way and has really embraced the idea that they need to reach out to that community, not just come up with ideas, but really just go to them and find out what that community wants and try to work it into the agency and how the agency can serve that growing group of boaters. So with that, thank you for your time, and I'd also like to thank all of the partners that are here. As you can see by the number of partners that are here, this agency really does reach out and partner with groups around the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Lynch, Mr. Meyer, or Mr. Carroll? Yes.
I have one for Mr. Meyer. Do you have any members in your organization above the Dalles Dam on the Columbia River?
We do.
And would you be so kind as to let me know who
the Dalles Yacht Club is a member of the Columbia River Yachting Association. And actually, we have also the Astoria Yacht Club is also a member of the Columbia River Yachting Association.
How about McNary?
Hermiston? No, they're not at this time. Maybe we ought to go up there and talk to them.
Okay. Which yachting association are you a member of? Sorry.
None.
Just paddles this board.
Yeah. I need to have a yacht, but be a member of it.
Co-Chair Jelen, really quickly, Peggy Lynch, personal hat We have a canoe, and I am very interested in the discussion about how non-motorized users can assist the Marine Board in funding their services, separate from the invasive species, which is critical to Oregon. So, just a personal comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We have one person left, Mr. Rolliter. Please proceed at any time.
Mr. Chair, thank you for letting me testify. My name is Joe Rolliter. Most of you all know me as a lobbyist representing both sports and commercial fishermen. I'm also a member of the board of the Port of Alsea, and I serve on the Guides Advisory Committee to the Marine Board. I'm not talking on behalf of any of those groups. I'm talking today on behalf of my own personal experience. Last fall, I was totally amazed to see a couple of people fishing for coho on Beaver Creek from paddle boards. I was shocked. So the world is changing, and I have noticed a tremendous increase in non-motorized craft. As Representative Parrish points out, nobody likes new fees, nobody likes increased fees, but I think those folks, and I'm included in those, I think I've got 8 non-registered boats that are under 8 feet long. If you explain what we're getting in terms of access points, safety on the water, restroom facilities that those folks won't gripe too much. And I know that we need those facilities. My port is actively recruiting those non-motorized people. We've identified a trail, a water trail at high tide that's only accessible at high tide to non-motorized boats, and it's really interesting. So thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming here today. That concludes our public hearing for today. This will come back for further consideration sometime in the future. So with that, we are, is there anything else for the good of the order? With that, we are adjourned.